Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hi, this is the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ. The first thing that you will probably notice is that I am not Brad Sesmat. I'm Bill Goodykoontz. I'm the film critic for the Arizona Republic, and I'm the chief critic for Gannett. And the second thing you'll probably notice is a creeping sense of disappointment that I'm not Brad. Brad has some time off, and I'm a guest sometimes on his show, so in a fit of bad judgment, he decided to let me sit in and host today. So if there are any mistakes, I say we blame Brad. The first thing that we're going to do is we're going to go to Jordan Hamm, who I am told is my life preserver here. If I really start to flail or have some fit of Tourette's or something, he's going to bail me out. But what he's going to do now is something actually even more useful. He's going to hit us up with some sports highlights.
This segment brought to you by Santan Ford. Stop into Santan Ford for their great variety on new and certified pre-owned vehicles. Just off the 202 and Val Vista, Santan Ford, where it's all about you. Last night, the Arizona Diamondbacks dropped the three-game series to the Angels, losing 7-1. Halos pitcher C.J. Wilson went 8 innings. He struck out 9. The Diamondbacks are back at Chase tonight, hosting the San Diego Padres, as former ASU head baseball coach and newly appointed San Diego Padres manager Pat Murphy comes back to the desert. Ruby De La Rosa will toe the rubber for the D-backs, and the Padres will send out James Shields. But the big story yesterday was Tiger Woods' struggles. Woods shot a 10-over in the first round. That's currently where he stands in the second. Here's Tiger after a disappointing round yesterday.
Not very happy, that's for sure. It was a tough day. Got off to a bad start. I stuck that 6-iron in the ground on the first hole, and then just couldn't quite get it turned around today. The hardest part is trying to leave yourself below the hole, and you can't. Because the putts coming down the hills are just, they're tough to make, put that way.
You know, obviously Tiger's struggling. I guess he's shooting even par today, but I like Tiger. I'm not saying I like him personally. I don't know the guy. I've never interviewed him. The only time I've ever even been around him was once at the Phoenix Open. He walked past with a crowd of about 40,000 people who were watching him. He took about 30 seconds. Those guys don't fool around, by the way, on the tour. He walked up, he hit the ball, he walked on. That was it. But I like living in a world where Tiger Woods is winning majors. Maybe it just reminds me of a simpler time in my own life or something. But I like seeing stuff that we haven't seen people do before. And I feel like that's when he was winning, you know, consistently winning majors, I thought that was something we were kind of latched onto. It's like, hey, here's this guy, you know, and he's doing stuff that we haven't seen before. You know, people my age, that meant something. It was kind of cool. What I also wonder now, though, and I asked some people this last night on social media and got some interesting answers, can you think of any sports figure, I'm not counting criminal behavior here, but can you think of any sports figure who has been at such a great height and has fallen so far? Who has fallen that far? And some of the examples, although one of my nieces pointed out to me that in some states, adultery is considered illegal, but that is not the kind of, and in Florida, which is where Tiger Woods lived, but I was actually, I was talking about, like somebody like OJ or something like that. But a couple of answers that I got from people, one was Lance Armstrong, and that's, obviously, I think that's a good answer. And another is Michael Vick. Both of these guys made, some sort of bad thing. But theirs wasn't quite so physical. I mean, Vic was in prison. Yeah, I mean, he's going to deteriorate some. And Lance Armstrong stops using, performance-enhancing drugs, and he can't perform the way he was. But Tiger Woods just has lost it. And I don't know. I can't think of anybody like that. I like to see people do these things. I liked Michael Vick. My dad worked at Virginia Tech. And in fact, I saw when I was a kid, my dad had – we got cheap season tickets. And Virginia Tech football was not what it is now back then. But my dad had season tickets, and we went. When Bruce Arians, the Arizona Cardinals coach, was the quarterback at Virginia Tech. And when he was named the head coach here, one of my brothers called me and said, "Do you remember going and seeing Arians play – at Tech?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." And I said, "But you see these pictures of him, he does not look like he used to look." And my brother said, "You know what? It was 40 years ago. Neither do you." And so I think that's true. But I don't know if I feel sad about Tiger Woods. I just feel like, but I think it's hard not to feel bad for him. I think that he was so great at something, and now he can't keep the ball in play. I don't know, but that's, you know, you will find that I will intermittently stray away from sports during the show because I will tell you before I get back strictly to sports. I wanted to say something about how I came to be here, what my credentials are for hosting a sports talk radio show. And my credentials are pretty much the same as most sports talk radio show hosts. I don't really have any. But I like to talk and I like sports. And I've actually worked in sports. I've had a kind of a varied career, that sort of a jack of all trades, master of none career at the Arizona Republic. I started in the Kingman Bureau. I was the Kingman Bureau for the Republic. And the first night that I went to a bar in Kingman, a guy threatened to beat me to death with a pool cue. So that was my introduction to the social life in Kingman. The social life wasn't much, but the job was. I got to write about stories that people in Phoenix cared about. And then I came down here, and I covered night cops, and I covered City Hall. And I was just having a nice little time covering City Hall when some editors called me in and asked me if I would like to watch sports on television for a living. And I thought, well, I'll do it for free already. Sure, if you want to pay me for it, that'd be great. And that led to a series of pretty cool assignments in sports, some with Kent Summers, who is our Arizona Cardinals beat writer, and we'll be talking to later. He is one of my guests. And then after that, I began writing a features column, and then I was a TV critic, and then I was an editor, and now I'm a movie critic. And much like hosting this show today, I think a lot of that just comes from sort of picking up the phone when it rang, just kind of being there at the right time or whatever. I should say something a little more about my guests. As I say, I have Kent Summers, who I think is a really great writer, and I love reading his stuff. He's not too much of a homer, even though he covers the home team, if that makes sense. We also have Tim Goodman, who is a really good friend of mine, and he is the chief television critic for the Hollywood Reporter. And Goodman and I used to spend a lot of time together at something called the Television Critics Association meetings twice a year. And I'm sure that he and I will talk about that a little more. And my other guest is this guy you may know, is named Jimmy Kimmel, and he hosts Jimmy Kimmel Live on ABC, and attended Arizona State University. A lot of times you'll see stories that say, and Jimmy Kimmel, a graduate of Arizona State University. He is not actually a graduate of Arizona State University, but that's he did attend, and I'm sure he will have some good stories about that. I do, but like I say, I mean, I do love sports. I still love sports. I don't get to watch as much of it as I used to. I did watch the NBA Finals, and I think that one of the things that we do in sports is we always try to glom onto, like, what is our personal experience with something? How can we relate personally to something that's happened? And I think you see media does it all the time. They localize stories. Oh, this happened somewhere in a far-flung corner of the world. Maybe somebody in Chandler had a similar experience. Let's do that. You know, we do that a lot. And I was certainly pulling for the Golden State Warriors, and my friend Goodman, you'll hear him be an obnoxious Golden State fan here in a little while. But the way that I always try to relate to that is that Steph Curry, I went to high school with his mom, and that makes me seem old. She's preserved herself a little bit better than I have. But one of the things, and so that makes me, and I'm friends with one of his uncles or cousins, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know if you've seen this thing online, but this Steph Curry, and it's starting to go viral. He is singing along with a song on the radio, and the song really surprised me. It's Something in the Air by Phil Collins. The movie the song that was used in the movie Risky Business, which I'm certain came out before Steph Curry was born, had to be. Here we go. Well, his family's horrified. And you know, one of the things I wondered about, the air drumming is always a nice touch, by the way. I think that even better than, like, embarrassing air guitar is that, although maybe the dumbest of all is when somebody plays, like, an air bass, and you see them, like, trying to pick out the notes, and you know, it's an ugly look. I wonder if the look of horror on their face, though, is because they don't like the song that he's singing, or if they're afraid that he's driving down the road and he doesn't have his hands on the wheel. He's like banging around, like, you know, kind of crazy. Like, I don't know. But good for Steph Curry. I think it's my favorite. I've said this to Brad a lot of times. My favorite NBA days were the cocaine years when nobody played defense, and a typical game would have been like in 140 to 135, and they just went up and down the court, up and down the court. You know, George Gervin, David Thompson, all these guys, Dr. J, when he was really Dr. J, and I thought that was fun, and I think that what Golden State seems to be doing is bringing that back without the drugs. And actually by playing a little bit of defense on the other end of it. So I hope, you know, now there's all this talk like, well, there, you know, too many people hurt and all that stuff. Eh, tough. They won it. They won it fair and square. Good for them. Good for Steph Curry. And you know, if he wants to go around and sing embarrassing songs and play the air drums, that's great for him. But don't you really, I mean, seriously, don't you wonder where that came from? Like, is this a song that he liked? And it's not. He doesn't just like it. He knows when the drum parts are. I mean, it's not just like tapping his foot. He's like, he's playing along with it. I don't know. But you know what this is going to lead to is like other sports stars doing this. There was this old commercial with LeBron where he was, I forget what it was for. I think it was for a phone company. But he and this guy were in this parking lot and they were exchanging CDs or something. And he starts doing this dance. And he was great. I mean, he could. It's probably no surprise. I mean, he appears to be a fairly good athlete, from what I can tell on television. So it's probably no surprise that he's a good dancer. But that was very interesting. Anyway, that's the kind of show that we have lined up for you. If you are still listening, I hope some people are still listening. I told the guys before we started, I could utter some horrible obscenity and we'd find out who was listening. I once wrote a column for the Republic where I spelled shirt without the R, and I found out immediately how many people were reading, but we won't stoop to that to find out how many people are listening. But I hope you are. We're going to be coming back with Kent Summers, and we will be back. We hope you will join us back on Sports 360 AZ. I'm Bill Goodykunz. I'll see you in a minute.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Hi, this is the Brad Sesmet Show, and I am not Brad Sesmet. I am Bill Goodykunz. I'm the film critic for the Arizona Republic and the chief critic for Gannett, and I'm filling in today. Hopefully, when we're done, Brad will still have a show. And these guys will still be gainfully employed, and we'll see how that goes. I'll try to do my part, but these guys are going to help me out. My guest right now is Kent Summers, who I work with at the Arizona Republic and at AZ Central. I briefly mentioned my inglorious career in sports there for a while. I have to say, a lot of the guys in sports didn't seem to like me very much when I came over there, which was fine. But the thing that I liked about Kent was, I don't know how he actually felt about it, but he did not show it openly. He was always quite nice to me. And we actually went on a road trip once to Nebraska to see Arizona State lose, I believe, 77-0 when we were there. But I think, all kidding aside, I think that Kent is probably the best writer at the paper and the best beat writer in football. He covers the Cardinals for us, and he covers the home team, but he's not a homer. He's funny, but he gets down to the real business. Kent, are you there?
Yes, I am. Wow, that's quite an introduction. I'm pretty sure I don't deserve it, but thank you.
Hey, man, you were nice to me. No. Do you remember our trip to Nebraska? You've been on a lot of trips since, but.
I remember going there a few times. Yeah, I remember going there and seeing a blowout game, and I remember seeing a close game once. And yeah, I only went a couple times.
Ours was the blowout, and my abiding memory of that is we didn't actually stay there. You know, we went back to Omaha and we spent the night, and the next morning we were going to the airport, and there was a rat in your room.
Yeah, that was the trip. Yeah,
and you went and you told the front desk, and you said, "There's a rat," and all they said was, "Oh, all right."
And they moved my room. I barely had put my bag down, and the thing ran from like, you know, where one of the beds into the bathroom, and so I shut the door. I'm like, "Oh, okay, yeah, that's one of our rat rooms. You prefer one that's in there? You prefer one of our non-rat rooms? Okay,
smoking, non-smoking,
rat? Yeah,
no rat." Don't bring any cheese, I guess, is the thing. As I say, you cover the Cardinals for us. You do a great job. All the people who listen to this know that, of course. I think that I have, like, you know, the casual fan, well, a little bit more than a casual fan, but everybody else's question every that you have this time of year? Are they going to be any good?
You know, I think so. As they're constructed right now, I think, you know, so much of it in the NFL, we can analyze every X and O and how that player moves and where, you know, offensive systems, et cetera. And so much of it comes down to, can your starting quarterback stay healthy? Will he stay healthy? And I think that's a lot of what it will be for the Cardinals. If they can keep Carson Palmer in the lineup, I think they're going to be a pretty good team. Obviously the season hinges on a lot of things, but, you know, I think two things are most important. That one, and secondly, they have a new defensive coordinator in James Betcher taking over for Todd Bowles, who did a great job in his 2 years here. And the players had such great belief in Todd Bowles. I think he could have called anything and they would have, you know, made it work and thought he was, you know, revolutionizing the game. And that's a difficult role to step into for James Betcher, who's only, you know, been in the NFL, been an assistant for 3 seasons, never coordinated a defense at any level. So I think those two things are going to be the two main things to watch this season.
Well, that's the thing that I always thought was interesting before was, of course, the Cardinals were bought in on the defense, but you'd see quotes from players on the other team saying, wow, that's the best we've been game planned against ever, you know, and it's like really unique and kind of they'd throw things at you that they didn't expect, they hadn't seen.
Yeah, it was different, you know, and almost every opponent said, you know, they change so much from week to week, probably as much or more than any other team in the league. I mean, Seattle obviously has a great defense, but you turn on, you know, a game of Seattle and watch their defense, and you're probably going to see the same scheme in week 3 that you see in week 13. Not a whole lot varies, but under Todd Bowles, he had a unique ability to identify a player's strengths and somehow mask his weaknesses and have him just do what he was good at. And, you know, one week that player's role may be, you know, 50 snaps on defense, and the next week it might be 10. And what Bowles was able to do, too, is keep guys happy within that system, even when they were playing the 10 snaps and, you know, not getting on the field much.
Winning seems to help a lot in that regard.
Yeah, you know, it's the old thing, you know, what comes first? You know, does winning foster that atmosphere? Do you have to have that atmosphere to win? I remember way back in the day, I interviewed Fred McGriff of the Braves, and he was saying, he goes, you know, we for years had a putting green here in the clubhouse, and nobody really thought anything about it because we always won. We were winning division titles, et cetera, et cetera. He said, then we got into a bad losing streak, and all of a sudden people started writing that, oh, they're the two laissez-faire, they've got a putting green in the clubhouse. They're screwing around. They're not thinking and talking about baseball. So, yeah, it's kind of the age-old question in sports. What comes first?
Well, I think winning usually does help most things. Before you were on, I was talking about – I actually saw Bruce Arians play quarterback at Virginia Tech when I was a kid.
Wow.
I know. I'm old.
But, I remember you telling me
but,
that. Yeah.
But the one thing that's good about that is that does mean that he is actually older. How good a coach is he? And I think very good from what I can tell, but you're the expert.
I think he's pretty good, and it's the more you're around him and watching teams play and watch them win, you wonder, why did it take this guy so long to get a head coaching job in the NFL? And I'm not really sure of the reason other than, you know, maybe his blunt, honest style isn't for everybody. Not really sure, but yeah, I mean, he has a way of coaching players. He's hard on them, but there are really no hidden agendas. He's not telling them one thing and telling somebody else a different thing. There's a consistency there, and, you know, as he likes to say, if any guy wonders about what his role is or what, you know, what I think of him, he can just come upstairs to my office and I'll tell him, you know. So there's a lot of respect for that, and I think, you know, he has a genuine affection for players, and, you know, I think they kind of appreciate his swagger and his, you know, and he admits he's a cocky guy, and I think players kind of find that endearing in a lot of ways. They like playing for a coach like that who, you know, will take some chances and do some different things too.
You know, he's obviously a completely different coach, a completely different guy, but that that attitude of him reminds me a little bit of like kind of Buddy Ryan light or something.
Yeah, it's true. It's Buddy Ryan sort of without the obnoxiousness, without the self-aggrandizement. I loved covering Buddy Ryan those 2 years for the Cardinals because I thought, you know, this is one of the NFL's last great characters. And, you know, and he was great with beat guys. He didn't always like what you wrote, but he respected if you were out there every day. But, you know, I think unlike Ryan, Arians is willing and to poke fun at himself, to admit mistakes. He's not going to make, you know, I would think back to Buddy Ryan making this veiled reference about there being a cancer in the locker room, a cancer on the roster, and he wouldn't talk about the name, but we all knew he meant the quarterback at the time, Steve Beardline. And, you know, that's something Arians will never, ever do. You know, if he's not going to name the guy's name, he won't say anything at all. So, you know, I think Arians will poke fun at anybody, including himself, and I think that's part of what endears him to people, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I always got from a distance with Ryan was that it was kind of like it was him and then it was you guys. I mean the players. It's me and it's the players. With Arian, it's more like he's part of it. You know, he's one of them.
And there's not the division. With Ryan, it was really, you know, there's me and my defensive players. And, oh, yeah, there's that other side of the ball that the game requires us to play. You know, and it was definitely a split locker room, and you were either a buddy guy or you weren't a buddy guy. And that's not the case with Arians.
Well, I think the guy who was not a buddy guy was my favorite football player of all time, Gary Clark, who in high school broke my jaw. And I can still pop it. But who I also, by the way, think should be in the Hall of Fame, and that's no joke because I think his statistics merit it. But anyway, I remember when he came here and he was making $2 million a year, and Buddy Ryan said he can take a 50% pay cut or he can take a 100% pay cut. I don't really care which. that may not be the best way to endear you to your players.
He didn't have a lot of fondness for holdouts or contract squabbles or whatever, and he was known to cut a lesser player on the field. I remember one rookie in training camp. They had a rookie show, and all of them did their little skits, and he did this little thing that had very religious overtones. You know, it was, I don't even remember what it was, but Buddy cut him the next day, and there was really no reason to cut him other than he didn't like his performance at the rookie show.
We don't have a whole lot of time left here, but I wanted to ask you something. You've been in sports for a long time. You've covered a lot of different teams in the Valley. Some as a beat writer, some you filled in, some, you know, you've been around it for a long time. Think back to when you were, you know, sort of starting out. Did you ever dream that the Cardinals would be the best team in town and the one that people cared the most
about? No. I, for years covering them, you know, I covered lots of 4-12 seasons and 5-11, and they missed winning over a couple of generations of people growing up here. And I think they're just getting to that now. And I remember, you know, going to the Super Bowl or when we, you know, when they beat the Eagles, and we were in the press box and Dan Bickley and I looked at each other and we both had the same look and we said the same things, like, can you believe this? We're going to cover a Cardinals team in the Super Bowl. And I had covered Super Bowls before then, and really one of the overriding feeling in all those times was, yeah, the team I cover is never going to be here. I just cannot imagine the Cardinals in the Super Bowl. So when it happened, you know, everybody asked me, he's like, oh, what are your days like? These are long days. I said, hey, I'm not complaining. I never thought, you know, I would cover a team in the Super Bowl. So I'm like a lot of other people. I'm just riding the wave.
Well, when they actually made it, I remember thinking that this is one of those things where, like in a movie, that the world is actually going to end because this means, like, we're never actually going to get to the Super Bowl to see it because this is like end times anyway. Anyway, I'm getting the hook here. So, hey, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks for having me, Bill.
All right. Oh, and now that's back to me. You know, I'm used to being a guest on this thing, not running the show a little bit. We will be back. Sports 360 AZ with Jimmy Kimmel, who is, of course, the host of Jimmy Kimmel Live. So come back for that. Hi, I'm Bill Goodykunz. I'm filling in for Brad Sesmat. And our next guest is somebody that I think probably a few of you have heard of. This is Jimmy Kimmel, who hosts Jimmy Kimmel Live, and somebody I've known a little bit for quite a while. How are you, Jimmy?
Well, Brad, where's Brad? What's going on? I thought I was calling him for Brad.
I was just thinking that. Isn't that the worst thing? Like, if you listen to, especially sports talk radio, when you tune in and, like, Dan Patrick's on vacation or something?
Yeah, there's always a sense of loss.
it's like, all of a sudden, I will let the kids watch TV for a while. I should say that I first met you when you were still doing The Man Show and I was a TV critic. And I introduced myself to you and you said, hey, when I was at Arizona State, I used to read your columns. And, of course, immediately I was flattered. And following that, all of a sudden it was like, oh, my God, am I that old?
Well, your name is very hard to forget also. It sounds fictional.
Well, that's what people ask me, did you make it up? And it's like, if I made it up, would I make this up?
Yeah, if you made it up, you'd probably be writing your own version of the Game of Thrones novel.
Maybe I should use my initials or something. Anyway, as I say, I've known you for a while before you were even the big star that you are now. And I've always wondered this. I wonder this about really successful people now. You're rich, you're famous, you hang out with cool people. You spent some time at Arizona State. When you were there, and we've talked before about your love of Letterman and that sort of thing, and you had goals and stuff, but did you ever have any inkling that you would be doing this kind of thing?
No. I mean, when I went to Arizona State, really my goal was to get a job in radio so I could drop out of college. That was my goal, is to get out of my parents' house. And that's what happened. I wound up working at I wasn't even working there. I was just calling in, doing characters for KZZP, which was the big FM station at the time, and there were guys named Mike and Kent who did the afternoon show there, and they took a liking to me, and Mike left to go do mornings in Tucson, and Kent was left behind, and he and I decided that we wanted to do a show together, so we made a demo tape at a recording studio on Camelback, and somebody, we sent it to someone in Seattle, and they hired us to do mornings at a station called KZOK.
So you succeeded in your goal of dropping out of college.
Yeah, that was really the only goal I've ever achieved. The rest all just happened accidentally.
This is like one of those things, like that my kids love you, by the way, and they're going to hear this thing. It's like, well, there's him, there's Bill Gates, there's Steve Jobs, and it's like, you know, no, that's okay.
Just show them the faces of the hundreds of thousands of other people who didn't graduate college who are now not running their own companies. It's definitely the exception.
Or their own TV show. I was thinking about, you know, what to talk to you about. And you obviously are a huge fan, or were a huge fan of David Letterman, as a bunch of us were. And we've talked about this a little before. You did a little more with it than the rest of us, I would say. And I should say also that I thought, for people who follow TV, they know what a big deal this was, that you ran a repeat episode during May Sweeps against, you know, Letterman's last show. But you have somehow, you've gotten to this place now where all of a sudden, I've always thought that you were the clear successor to Letterman because you've actually kind of changed the genre some, and not many people do that. But you're kind of like the old hand here now, and you're not like an old guy. What's that like? Late night's really changed.
It's funny, I didn't really feel old until 11 months ago when my daughter was born, and now she wakes up at like 6:10 in the morning. I'm definitely moving a little bit more slowly, but I'm still as kind of, you know, I'm crazy. I work very hard. I'm up in the morning looking through the news trying to figure out what we're going to do, and I'm up very late writing scripts and working on things, and I think that when I lose that zeal, that's when I'll probably decide to stop doing this. I haven't, unfortunately for my wife, I haven't lost that zeal yet. I'm still a maniac when it comes to, I enjoy the process of seeing something that day and making a bit about it that's on the show that night. It's something that I did in radio, and it's something that you don't have the opportunity to do in any other area of television. It's really the only job in television where you can turn something around so quickly, and that's fun for me. I greatly prefer that to spending 8 months writing a script and refining it and then shooting it and putting it on the air a season later. I mean, it really, it's much better, much more fun for me.
I think that, like, I think a lot of us who work in you know, newspapers before, one of the good things about the decline of newspapers is the rise of blogging and that sort of thing. And once that you get sort of hooked on that immediacy of having a platform and a voice, like what you're talking to, that's hard to do without.
It is. And also, I have this kind of philosophy that 90% is good enough. And I learned that in radio when you're doing five shows a day and the shows are 5.5 hours long, that if you spend too much time working on one thing, it comes at the expense of other things. So that last 10%, it's almost like being a home contractor. You know how they skip out on you before the job is finished? That's what I do every day.
Well, that's good. It's good that you're putting in just enough effort. No,
exactly.
You have, I think, in a way that other people, some other hosts, and I would say, by the way, late night is in pretty good shape all the way around right now. I think that there's been an infusion of younger people, but I think that one of the things that that's really helped you is you figured out fairly early on how to use the internet and the power of viral video and that sort of thing. At what point did you realize, hey, this is, you know, guys, we gotta pay some attention to this. We gotta use this.
Well, first of all, I think you're giving me too much credit by saying I figured it out. And I really didn't figure it out. What happened was we put videos on and suddenly people started posting them on their YouTube channels. And we saw that, like, I think the first really, really big viral video for us on the talk show was the Matt Damon, the video that my ex-girlfriend Sarah Silverman made. And that video, we don't even know how many views it got because so many people posted it, and there were some of them had 30 million. I mean, it was crazy, and we decided that it was better if we consolidated because people were putting their ads in front of it and really making kind of presenting it in a way that it we didn't want it presented. So we decided to start our own YouTube channel. But I will tell you, the first viral video that I was ever involved with came during the Man Show. And we had this little boy who we sometimes put in like a Girl Scout outfit and yeah. have him sell beer instead of cookies outside of supermarkets.
Yes.
And that became a viral video that people used to email to each other. And it's one of the first viral videos I ever remember. And I remember, you know, that 14.4 dial-up, I'd get this huge file. I'd be like, what is this? Somebody sending me my own video saying, hey, look at this. Yeah, that's from my show, jerk. And then when we did Crank Anchors, these phone calls that we would make, this is a show we did on Comedy Central, became viral audio files that people used to share. And so there were a bunch of different calls, especially there was one that Wanda Sykes did, and there was one that Tracy Morgan did that made their way around the internet via email. And this kind of idea, I think that it really kind of made an impression on me all the way back then.
Did you? But you, I don't think you say I'm giving you too much credit. I don't think you're giving yourself enough, because I think that what happened then was when other networks saw the success you guys were having with it, they glommed onto it too, as they eventually would have. But I mean, there's something to be said for getting there first, no matter how you got there.
Yeah, well, nobody really remembers, except for you, Bill. You're the only one who remembers it. our very first show, we showed a viral video. There was this guy who looked like he was 11 years old. His name's Andy Milonakis, who sat there with a guitar in his room. It was the night of the Super Bowl, and he strummed this guitar badly and just kept saying, the Super Bowl is gay, the Super Bowl is gay. And it became a popular viral video, and I played it on the show that night. And that was, that had to be the first time a YouTube video was shown on network television. I'd be surprised if it had happened before that.
What, we're going to get the hook here in a minute, but I've a couple of things I've always wondered. Who's your best guest? Who's your favorite guest you've ever had?
That's a tough one. The person, though, that there are a few people that come to mind immediately. Charles Barkley is definitely one of them. He's so great. I mean,
he's so smart. When I used to work in sports, and you'd get in there just sit in the locker room with the Suns, the way his comedy mind works is like he's like a real comic.
He really is. Consistently, I mean, he's a guy that I have to do no work with whatsoever. I go out there and I'm 100% certain that he's going to be not just funny but interesting also. And it is funny because sometimes before he's on the show, his handlers or whomever, the people from TBS are like, hey, don't ask him about gambling and let's not talk about drinking. And I'm like, oh, really? And then the first thing he comes right out and starts talking about gambling and drinking.
I love it when the person himself like flies way over the head of the publicist.
Oh, almost 80% of the time, the celebrity has no idea what their publicist is saying that they don't want discussed, it's almost always a surprise.
I know. I talk to a lot of movie stars and directors and stuff for my regular job, and it happens, as you say, almost all the time. They're the ones who bring up the stuff that the publicists think they don't want to talk about.
If you want to be treated like a child for the rest of your life, the best way to do it is to become famous, because... people ask you if you're hungry all the time, and they tell you when a conversation is over and where you're going and what you're supposed to talk about and what's not appropriate to talk about. And it really is like being a child.
Are there worse things, probably?
I guess so, yeah.
One more thing before you go. This is one that you won't want to answer. Who's the worst guest? And I don't mean like as a bad person. I mean just who's somebody that you always wanted and you got them and it didn't work out?
Well, I can't think of anybody that I always wanted and got them and it didn't work out. I mean, people have asked this question. I had a very unpleasant conversation with Vivica A. Fox on my show once. But, you know, really the worst guests are the guests who don't know why they're there and they don't know the show or me, or sometimes they're not from this country and they don't understand the genre and they give you one word answers and they the game is you're supposed to come out, you're supposed to let the audience get to know you, maybe tell an interesting story or two, at the very least expand on the answers to the questions that are presented to you. And some of them don't do that. You just kind of sit there and stare at each other. And that's where I am always grateful for my radio experience, because I'm not afraid of silence. And in fact, some part of me takes a perverse pleasure in sitting there and staring silently at someone in front of a group of 150 people. And so those are the people that are worst. And generally, here's how it goes. After the show, I'll say, let's not invite that person back. And everybody go, yeah, we want to invite that person back. And then 18 months later, I'll see their name on the schedule again. I'll go, what is this person doing here?
Well,
so everyone ignores me at work.
The beauty with your show, though, is like I think a lot of times if things start to get uncomfortable, you think it's a bit, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because last night on our show, we showed a clip of Transparent, the show Jeffrey Tambor stars in, and he plays transgendered man, he transitions into a woman, and the clip we showed was a very serious clip, but the audience didn't know the show and they didn't understand, so they see Jeffrey Tambor in a wig and a dress, and he's having what they don't realize is a serious conversation with his daughter on the show, and the audience is laughing. And in rehearsal, I said, what happens if the audience laughs at this? And sure enough, they were laughing at it, but they figured it out just a little bit too late.
Well, that we are going to get the hook here now. I know you've got to go. You do have a lot of experience in radio. You got any advice for me here for the rest of the day?
Let's see. It is a sports station. You might want to talk about sports a little bit.
Okay. Favorite sports movie of all time?
Greatest sports movie of all time. I would have to say Fast Break, starring Gabe Kaplan. I love that movie.
Not the fish that saved Pittsburgh. I'll go with North Dallas 40. How about that?
Okay, that's a good one, too.
Hey, I really appreciate your time. Thanks
so
much for doing
this. All right, bye.
Yes, indeed. There is the music. Hi, I'm Bill Goodykunz, and I'm sitting in for Brad Sesmet on the Brad Sesmet Show on Sports 360 AZ. Every Friday, I am a guest on Brad's show, and we talk about movies, and every week, they play that music. And whenever there are other guest hosts, they always say, wow, we don't get that kind of music. And I think, well, what I really would like is to be carried in on a litter, you know, like in Egypt or somewhere. And but that's never happened. But then I got to thinking about it, and I thought, you know, I was thinking about the show today, and I thought, well, I wonder if they're going to play the music, and, you know, how much of the movie segment we're going to do. And it made me think it should be like a baseball player coming up to bat. And I was trying to think of like what would my music be. I think I think Enter Sandman. You know, the Metallica song. I once covered Woodstock '94. You know, and I went and spent 4 days in the rain, which was actually really really fun. But you know, Metallica played, and they played that, and that was when the Rattlers first came to town. And they would always play them, and I think that's the way to go. But I don't know that it has anything to do with movies, except for the great Metallica documentary, Some Kind of Monster. That's a really good movie if you want to. But I don't know if I can talk Brad into doing that or not. But so this is the part where Brad will normally interview me about movies, and I am going to talk. This is a weird. And I told Jordan Hamm, if you want to jump in, please ask me questions. If you want, I don't want to interview me. I thought about doing it in another voice, like I could be Brad. And then you know, ask you, so what are the good movies this week? As it turns out, this is the best weekend for movies of the year. Last week, of course, you know, you get this Mondo blockbuster, Jurassic World, which I did not think was very good. And it subsequently had the largest opening in history. So evidently not a lot of people agreed with me, but that's fine. The question I do have is after they saw it, yeah, they went to see it, but did they like it? You got to go see it because everybody goes to see this kind of thing. But did they like it? I thought it was kind of stupid. You know, the effects are good, but whatever. This week, there's some great stuff. And the best movie, and probably the best movie of the year so far, is Inside Out, which is the latest Pixar movie. And whether you're a kid or grown up or in between or whatever, I think you've got a Pixar movie in there that you love somewhere. The Toy Story trilogy, I think you could make an argument, is the best movie trilogy ever, except for maybe Lord of the Rings or something. You'd think Godfather, but the first two are among the two best movies ever made. The third one dropped off so much it doesn't really count. But Inside Out is the best movie certainly since Up or a Toy Story 3, I think. They kind of hit on some worse times there. But this movie is, like some of their best movies, it's really hard to explain in a way that makes you want to go see it. I think it's about emotions and the emotions that live in your head, and they are actually people. Like you can see the characters on the screen there. There's sadness, and joy is the one. They're in the head of an 11-year-old girl, so joy has been the dominant emotion forever because kids are happy, right? Well, they move from Minnesota to San Francisco, and things are not as happy all of a sudden. Concurrently, what happens is sadness and joy get lost, and they get away from the center, the brain center there. So the girl just kind of plummets, and she's in a new place. The hockey team isn't like the old hockey team in Minnesota. The house is not as nice. She can't make friends as easily. School is different. It's really well done, and it's incredibly creative. I mean, who thinks that, you know, I would like to have been in that pitch meeting. Hey, we're going to do this thing where we have these little cartoon characters in a kid's head. And it's somewhat reminiscent of a TV show in the 90s called Herman's Head, but it's much, much better. This is a great movie, and I just think that this is one you got to go see. I don't care how old you are. I mean, you guys, this may be not in your necessarily your wheelhouse of movies you think you want to go see. You do want to go see it. Will you?
Yeah, I'll go take a look. If sure. Bill Goodykoon says it's good, I'll do it.
Sure, the pictures move, the colors are. No, but seriously, it doesn't necessarily sound like something that. And you know what's weird is typically Pixar movies open at number one, and I really don't care about box office. I really don't. But Pixar movies typically open at number one. This is not going to do that because Jurassic World is still going to be. Jurassic World will have a big drop off. Good or bad, they always do. I mean, that's just the way it goes. But unless you think back to like way back when, like something like Star Wars, where my favorite thing about that was when people would leave the theater, walk around, and get back in line and see it again. And that's how you know you got a great movie. But I hope that a lot of people see this, and a lot of people will. But I hope everybody does. The next movie, and this may be a more tier, like I don't know, it's called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. And it's got a bunch of people that you don't probably know, and it is exactly what it sounds like. There's a girl who's been diagnosed with leukemia, and the me character is a guy named Greg, and his mom tells him that he has to go be friends with her. And he knows her, but they haven't really talked since, like, kindergarten or something. And they're in the same high school together, and he's just kind of guy that floats above the crowd. He doesn't really want to be a part of a group. He just wants to kind of get out and get on with his life. Of course, they become friends. What this movie doesn't do, as opposed to a movie like Fault in Our Stars or something like that, they don't force romance. There's nothing. In fact, he makes reference several times to the fact, he said, if this was that kind of movie, we would kiss right now and everything would be solved. But this is not that kind of movie. And it's not. It is, as that sounds, it's very self-referential, very meta. I mean, they talk about what's going on. His friend Greg, who he can't even call his friend, he calls him his co-partner or something, because they make bad movies out of great movies together, and they give them really really silly names. But they, I'm trying to think of Apocalypse Now, what they call it. I can't think of it. It's like a box of something now, box of something now. I don't know. But they decide they're going to make a movie for the dying girl. This it's a very touching movie. It's very sad, but they earn the sadness. It's really good. The last movie is called Dope, and it's set in there's a young black man growing up in a really tough section of L.A. He wants to go to Harvard. He's really smart. He's kind of a geek. He's got geeky friends. That is not necessarily the safest person to be growing up in this neighborhood in Los Angeles. He and his friends getting involved in a drug deal, first by accident as observers, then they get more deeply involved, then they become more active in it. This is a movie that it doesn't ignore stereotypes of this kind of movie, but it gets around them. It's better than that. And it's really an underserved audience. I mean, we don't see enough movies with characters who aren't Lily White. And this is, but beyond that, it's just good. It doesn't mean they could be green and it's still a good movie. So I think I gave Inside Out 5 stars. I gave Me and Earl 4.5, and I gave the Dope 4.5. There's another movie coming out called Burying the X, which I gave 2. So that kind of screws up it was going to be like one of those, like, you know, Steph Curry from 3. It was going to be that kind of a percentage, but I had to watch Burying the X. And by the way, don't watch Burying the X.
Now, I'm seeing in Dope, Rick Fox is in this.
Rick Fox is actually a pretty good actor. He's had a good acting career. The thing that, of course, is weird about any role he's in is he's a head taller than everybody else. I mean, he didn't look gigantic on the basketball court, but he's got to be 6'8", 6'9", something. And he's in it for about 5 minutes. He's a city councilman who comes to the high school, and he wants to show him. He just points to some people like, look, and we have kids here working after school in the chemistry lab. Of course, what they're doing is they're getting drugs ready to sell, you know. But Fox has been in a lot of stuff, and he is a handsome guy. I mean, he appears to have kept himself in pretty good shape, unlike some of us. I really don't remember a movie a weekend with this many good movies. And if you're going to prioritize it, you probably ought to go see Dope and Me and Earl first, because they're not going to last as long. They're smaller movies. I hope Inside Out is going to be around for a long time. But Inside Out is one that you need to see at the theater. So don't miss out on that. So we are going to our break. And next up is going to be my pal Tim Goodman, the Hollywood Reporter's chief TV critic. He's a lot of fun. He's a good guest. Please join us again in a few minutes on Sports 360 AZ. Hello again. This is the Brad Sesmat Show, and I am not Brad Sesmat. I still am not Brad Sesmat. I'm Bill Goodykuntz. I'm the film critic for the Arizona Republic and the chief critic for Gannett. My next guest is Tim Goodman, but before we get to Tim, we're going to go to Jordan, and he's going to take care of some business here.
All right. This segment brought to you by Santan Ford. Stop into Santan Ford for their great variety on new and certified pre-owned vehicles just off the 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it's all about you. The Arizona Diamondbacks dropped the 3-game series to the Angels yesterday, losing 7-1. Halos pitcher C.J. Wilson went 8 innings and struck out 9. The Diamondbacks are back at Chase tonight, hosting the San Diego Padres, as former ASU head baseball coach and newly appointed San Diego Padres manager Pat Murphy comes back to the desert. Ruby De La Rosa will tow the rubber for the D-backs, and the Padres will send out James Shields. And the big story from yesterday was Tiger Woods' struggles at the U.S. Open. Woods shot a 10-over yesterday and continues to struggle today. Here is Tiger after yesterday's disappointing round.
Not very happy, that's for sure. It was a tough day. Got off to a bad start. I stuck that 6-iron in the ground on the first hole, and then just couldn't quite get it turned around today. The hardest part is trying to leave yourself below the hole, and you can't. Because the putts coming down the hills are just They're tough to make, put that way.
Okay, there's Tiger struggling. We've talked about him a little bit before. I wish he wasn't. My next guest is Tim Goodman, who is the chief TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and I used to be a TV critic as well, and we spent a lot of summers together, and Tim can tell you that we used to actually keep up pretty religiously with how Tiger was scoring back when he was winning every major around the world. Remember that?
I do remember that, back when he was good.
Do you remember that Les Moonves, who is the most powerful guy on TV, still, he was then, still is, he was actually giving you scores?
Yeah, it was maybe a high watermark in Yield's career. He was he hired some, I won't say flunky because now I know the guy who did it, but he did hire some guy to follow along. It was, I guess it was the British Open, and we were up really early, and he didn't want me to miss the CBS sessions and particularly the executive sessions. So he was giving me updates all day. It was very nice.
It was fun for all of us because we get to keep up with it. And that was, you like Tiger? You pulling for Tiger? Do you want him to get back to his old form? Or?
I am pulling for him. It's painful to watch. And I was thinking about this the other day. You know, what other sport, because you've seen this happen before. Like, what other sport does an athlete who's so dominant and just kind of owns it and has so many skills, it looks like they just forgot how to play it? You know, it looks like they forgot how to play the sport, and they could be beat by their neighbor. I mean, that just only happens in golf. I mean, there's been a number of professional golfers who've basically lost the ability to play. He's not there yet, but it still just looks painful to watch.
We think Nick Faldo did, David Duval did. I mean, these guys, like, they lose it somehow. But that's what's weird, because they don't lose it physically. You know, 90-year-old guys go out there and play golf.
Yeah, well, I mean, the David Duval thing was just particularly painful to watch, because it was just, it's got to be mental. That's where it is. There's something in his brain. I'm sure people are thinking that it's some kind of karma or whatever he did, you know, in his naughty days. But it's painful to watch, because, you know, it wasn't that long ago we were all talking about how quickly he was going to catch Nicklaus, and now Nicklaus is basically saying, you know, good luck with that.
Look at us talking about sports.
How about that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was going to say that one of the things that I told these guys when I said you're going to be my guest, you're an obnoxious Bay Area sports fan. But you're an even more obnoxious fantasy baseball player. And I always I always felt like when Tim and I were, as were hundreds of other people, we were members of the Television Critics Association. By the way, I am sort of like the guy who sold the Apple stock right before Jobs came back. I stopped covering TV. It was already, The Sopranos had been on, The Wire had been on, but it was before this explosion of greatness, you know, and then I went over to movies, which are great, but they're kind of like they always were. But the, I think that they, that was right when you started to get into fantasy baseball, and the TV tours, as we called it, you go and you stay for 3 weeks in the summer, 2 weeks in the winter, and you talk to producers, you talk to directors, you talk to the cast, and it's a real grind. Physically and mentally, it is an actual grind. I think that this is somewhat offset by the fact that they put you up at either the Ritz-Carlton in Pasadena or the Beverly Hilton, and and you go to these parties at night. The networks have these lavish parties at places that I would never have gotten into. I mean, I remember we had some of those parties in those places in L.A. that don't even have names. You know, they don't have names on the door. If you don't know where it is, you don't get to go there. And I didn't belong there. I remember sitting at one of those ones beside Tyra Banks, and she was making this big deal, making everybody knew that she was eating this big thing of barbecue. It's like, not only am I eating, I'm a model, but I'm eating pork barbecue, you know this. And they came in and they said, just want to let everybody know, the public is coming in 10 minutes. And she bolted. I've never seen anybody move that fast. She's like, see ya, bye. And it's like, oh, I'm a woman of the people. But we go to these parties. But I remember we would lose you for 2 hours at a time because you had to go mess around with your fantasy baseball on it.
Yeah, it's, let's be clear here. You got to make the distinction. I'm playing NL only.
Yes.
Which is hardcore. This whole mixed league stuff, that's for amateurs. you could have an all-star at every position. In NL only, not only are you having guys who are technically not starting a lot of times, they're either in a platoon or you just pick some up and hope he's so deep on the bench You're just hoping he gets in every third day because the pickings are very, very slim on the waiver wire. If one of your guys gets hurt, it's pretty deadly. But the good news about that is that I just fast-forward through any American League highlights on TV, so I can just cut all my highlight viewing in half. And then when I go to I'm up here going to Giants game, so every time I'm at a game, not only do I know everybody on the other team, I know who's in their farm system because you got to know who's coming up, right? So, I'm kind of struggling this year. I'm in third place. So I'm struggling. Some of my Diamondbacks are hurting me.
I was going to say, who you got? What Diamondbacks do you have?
I had more. This is how bad it is. This is how desperately bad it was. I had Devin Mesoraco from the Reds, who's of course hurt a hip and he's out. And when that happened, I got Wellington Castillo now. So he's you guys picked him up. I had to pick him up with you. I've been through a couple of your pitchers, Anderson, and now on my DL, I got Corbin. I'm hoping he's making a big comeback. You better tell me he's gonna.
He's gonna come out.
Yep. I have my two stars are AJ Pollock and Chris Owings. I'm not sure Owings is a huge star yet. He's not owned very much, but he's doing well for me. Those are my big. Those are my big Diamondbacks.
This is a sports show. Give us a tip. Who should somebody pick up? Who's a bargain?
Who's a bargain? Well, I mean, if it's NL only, well, see, that's the thing. It's NL only. There are no bargains because everybody's got everybody. But if you're in a mixed league, you're probably thinking, I can pick. Yeah, I tell you what, I picked up Jamie Garcia when everybody thought he was going to be hurt forever, and he's pitching lights out, which is great, and. And I still have faith in Chris Heston. He threw a no hitter for the Giants, and he's a strikeout machine. But I think my best pickup so far was Michael Franco, the guy who called up the third baseman for the Phillies. He's raking. I kind of like him. But again, I'm in third place still. I got a rally.
This is detailed stuff, man. We probably ought to talk about TV at some point here. This is something that I've talked to you about before, and I've always wondered this. But let's just say you are somebody who used to watch everything on TV for a while, and then all of a sudden it stopped, and you couldn't watch any because let's say you had to review like six movies a week, and you had four kids. Let's just say that you knew a person like that. If you wanted. Let's think of this in a window of, like, say, the past 5 years. And now, I can binge watch and I can do all these kind of things. If you were going to watch one thing to get you back into it, what would it be?
Wow. I mean, that's great because, could it be something that's off the air? Is that what you're saying?
No, it can be on now. What are some shows? Obviously, Breaking Bad is one. Mad Men is one.
Those are the big ones.
What would be a way to get back into, like, this is how great TV is now?
Well, I'll tell you what I would do. I would go back and watch FX, how they did Fargo. Second season's coming up, but the first season's 10 episodes. It's just total absolute brilliance. I would watch that. First season of True Detective, I really love. Second season, which starts in a couple of days, is not very good. At least not in the early going, but the first season's really great. So that's big. And then, there's just so much stuff now. Game of Thrones is huge. I'm a huge Mad Men fan, but I do also understand, Bill, that that's not for everybody. That's not everybody's cup of tea. We always talk about how cable takes over, and they really do, because FX has The Americans, which I think is probably the next great TV series. That's huge. And the FX, I know, had a series you like. But I'm not sure how often you watch it, which was Justified.
Yeah,
hey, it was good. That was good. But
Southern accent, you can't beat that.
Yeah, Southern accent, you can't beat that. It's not a bad position to be in, Bill. If you've been out of it and you're coming back in, because you could drop cable. Essentially, you could just completely drop cable, and you could just either rent things, get a box set, or rent them or stream them. And you can always catch up, and you could take years to catch up of all. If you've missed 5 years, you've missed thousands of hours of great television. You wouldn't need to pay your cable bill. You could just go stream all this stuff and then catch up. And then by the time you caught up, you're another 3 years behind. You'd never have to pay for cable again. So basically, we're just saving people money.
Well, that's even when I was doing it, and it's been a few years. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff on, and the difference in movies and TV. One of the big differences, of course, is. a huge movie will come on, Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, so far the biggest movie ever. But when it's over, it's over. I don't have to write about Jurassic World ever again, unless, you know, I don't know. But with TV, if it's good, it's going to be on, if it's a traditional network show, maybe 7 years. Cable, who knows how long, but it is episodic, and you're going to have to write about it all the time. I mean, even back then, I had a hard time keeping up. And I just wonder how you guys do it now.
Well, if we had this conversation even, you know, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago maximum, I would tell you that I was sort of barely hanging on, but I still had control of all the, you know, all the shows that people are going to be talking about, the water cooler shows. I was, anything that was scripted, comedy or drama, I had control of that, and I was in it. But now, fast forward, you know, a year and a half later, I think a lot of TV critics have basically given up the idea that we can watch everything, because not only is it a 52-week TV season and you would never, ever be able to take a vacation or actually spend time with your family if you have one, but it's now out of control. I mean, I joke around that, you know, Alan Sepinwall, who's you know, one of our critics, who's sort of legendary for this ability to watch a billion shows nonstop and never leave the TV screen. Even he's sort of given up and just thinking, like, I can't do it all. I can't do all this stuff. So I've tried to tell my boss, you know, bosses, like, okay, look, here's a world we live in, and it's impossible for one person to just do scripted, much less, if you were doing reality shows. And I don't know if you saw these numbers, Bill, but 6 months ago, FX Research did a study that said there's 1,715 television shows on right now only in prime time. So that's 8 to 11. 1,715. So that's insanity.
Well, I'm going to have to let you get back to watching them because I'm getting the hook here in a second. But one, like in 10 seconds, put you on the spot. Greatest TV show of all time.
The Wire.
That was easy.
That was easy.
Hey,
thanks,
man.
Followed up by Mad Men. There's Chris.
Yeah, now you're going to qualify. Followed up by Mad Men. All right. Hey, thanks for your time.
All right.
And that's it. I hope that we still have some audience left. I hope that Brad still has some audience left when he comes back on Monday. I want to thank him for letting me sit in. And I'd also like to especially thank Kent Summers, Tim Goodman, and Jimmy Kimmel. It's been a lot of fun. Hope you've had fun. I hope that you will be back on Monday.